Thanks for joining us for another episode of Divorce Confidential. I'm Michelle DeLino, divorce and family law attorney in Washington State. I am the owner and managing attorney of DeLino Family Law Group. For over a decade, we have been helping people with all of their family law needs. And I'm here with my co-host, Amy Alpeza. Amy is a certified real estate divorce specialist, and Amy and I are happy to bring you another great topic today. How's it going?
It's going great. It's going great. We are, I shouldn't say we're wrapping up summer. I think we're having one of the best summers that we've had in the Pacific Northwest. And but weather's been fantastic. And I think that kind of leads us to one of our topics for today, which is about international travel with divorced or separated families and their children.
Totally. This comes up a lot. So we thought it'd be a good idea to talk to you guys about it. And I think the most important thing to know is that if you have children, this is something to get in your parenting plan. If you don't have it in your parenting plan and you're already divorced, this is something to think about how you're going to deal with it. So you have kids, the world is changing, people are going places all the time. COVID's basically over now, but people are traveling again, right? And you have to agree with your spouse to a certain level on if your kids can travel internationally and where. And we live in a border state, right? Like we live near Canada. So going to Canada is different than like going to China or Europe or something. So it's really important to be clear on, even if you think your kids aren't going to be traveling, contemplating that and getting it in your parenting plan. And that leads to all kinds of issues like who's going to hold the passports and what happens when somebody gets back from a trip and how much notice do you have to give the other party? And when you give notice, do you have to give like a full itinerary? Like there's all kinds of little things that you can contemplate, but it's really important to think about this kind of stuff and plan it out rather than have to be, juggling it at the last minute. Yeah. And like certain circumstances, like Amy, like in your circumstance, your ex-husband is from overseas. So it wasn't abnormal for your kids to travel, and you guys were fairly amicable about it, right? Tell me about that.
Yeah. I mean, we traveled. So my ex-husband's Croatian and all of his family still live there. And, we traveled there almost every summer when we were married with the kids. And so it was only natural that when we were no longer married, that he would still want to take them there. Right. And, honestly, I was very nervous the first year just because, I had three kids and they weren't teenagers at the time like they are now, but it was nerve wracking to be away from them for 2 or 3 weeks at a time. And, we worked through that. And I think the first time they went, we did have to have passports. I think I did have to write a letter, but Michelle, correct me if I'm wrong. Do parents still have to sign? Do they have to get like a notarized waiver for the other parent to travel? Or
yes,
they do. Okay.
Yeah. And it's a great question that you asked that, because sometimes someone won't ask for it or you don't have to do it, but it's always a better idea to be prepared with it, because that one time that you don't have it, you're going to need it. And right. Technically you are supposed to have a travel consent letter from the other parent, which is just a notarized letter. We kind of have a standard form in our office that we use that says you have the your authority to travel, even though you're not there, because what'll happen is, TSA or whoever in the airline as well will look and they'll be like, okay, here's these kids and they're minors and here's one parent. And so the first thing that they think of is this parent trying to take off with the kids? What's going on, right? So they are required to check a travel consent letter, and having one and just having it in your parenting plan that neither party will reasonably refuse that request, so long as there's a notice requirement and information is given, is really important. This brings up something else that I want to get out there before I forget, that's actually really important. And that is, travel to one country is not necessarily the same as travel to another. And when it comes to the ability to enforce a parenting plan in another country, so let's say the worst thing happened and somebody went and took the kids and was trying to just basically kidnap them and run away. If you took your kids to Italy or Croatia or any number of other countries or Canada, Those countries are signers to what is called the Hague Convention, which is an international convention and treaty on child abduction. And so those countries would all honor and enforce a United States parenting plan or custody order, and you'd get your kids back. They'd help you get your kids back. However, there are countries that are not signers to that, and it is very common. And I can tell you from experience in some cases that I've had, very necessary that you're careful about restricting travel to those countries. The main ones are India and Russia. If your child were to go to India or Russia, which is a big thing because there's a lot of people from India in our particular area because of they come here for tech jobs. And so if your child was to go there and the other parent decided not to return, India and their courts and law enforcement could care less, and you probably would not see your child again. Yeah. So that's really important. And it can be really hard because people's families are there, right? And you want to take them to see their grandparents or whatever, but it's a major risk. And child abduction is a major risk. Another one is the Philippines used to not be a signer, and now they're like a partial signer. So going there is not. In Japan too, used to be that way, but now Japan is a signer. So you want to know, like, what are my risks with taking a child to a country? You know, is it somewhere that I could get them back? And you might think you don't have those concerns, but you never know what's going to happen too. So
tell our listeners then, if they do have like a situation, let's say, maybe we can break it up into two different kind of areas. Like,
sure.
People who have children with an ex-spouse, they have family overseas in a country that is a signer to the Hague Convention. Yep. What are some good tips and ideas for them to know as part of, maybe to put as part of their parenting plan?
Yeah,
and moving
definitely.
Forward?
Yeah, that's a great question. Let's just give you the nuts and bolts. Like, the succinct bite of advice that I would give you is this. You want it in any parenting plan, especially if you have family overseas, to say, the parties agree that the children can travel internationally, unless there's a compelling reason not to, to countries that are signers to the convention. And then B, you want to say, how much notice will one party give the other party to be able to agree to travel? For international travel, I always put in my plans, since Canada's next door and you could theoretically run up there for a weekend, I'll put, this doesn't apply to Canada. Canada requires 48 hours notice because you might decide to take a weekend trip. Any other country, depending on the parties, some people are fine with 30 days notice. Some people are fine with 2 weeks notice, but usually to buy international tickets, especially, you know, now tickets are expensive and fuel's expensive. I think it's reasonable to say, you know, 21 to 30 day notice that you'll give the other party. So you want to say how much notice, and then you want to say what you'll provide in order for the other parent to agree to the travel. And pretty normal things to provide are an itinerary, which is not what you're doing every moment, but where the kids will be staying, with an address of where they're staying. So it's different if you're like, hey, they're at my grandma's house and you know where that is, great. But if you're like, hey, I'm taking them to Paris and then here and there, you want to know the hotels where they're staying. You want to know where they're going to be. So address is an itinerary for where they're staying, and then itinerary showing the proposed flights. And then once the flights are booked and the trip is agreed, you should have it in there that the other party will provide proof of the ticket. So you'll know when they're going and when they're coming back. And once you have those things in place, then it should specify that the parties will agree to sign a travel consent letter and provide it, you know, no later than a week before travel, and that travel with proper notice and proper itinerary won't be reasonably refused. So it's kind of like, hey, you know, yeah, you don't want to be told 48 hours before I'm taking the kids overseas, but if someone has like a month's notice and they have an itinerary, there shouldn't be a reason to stop that. So that's, especially if it's to a country that is, you know, you could get them back. So I think that's kind of the nuts and bolts of what you want. You also want to specify who's going to hold your kids' passports, number one. And number two, what's going to happen when those passports expire, if they need to be renewed? Because I don't know if every listener knows this, but unless you have sole custody of your kids, which most people don't, both parents have to be present, or the other parent has to sign something notarizing for renewal of the passport. So you have to coordinate with them. Yes. And if you don't have it in there that the parties agree to do this, that can be a problem when you need a trip, someone's passport's expiring, and both parents have to coordinate. So it's really important to include that in the parenting plan. And then I always, if the parties get along and both parents are responsible, I always just say that you say who's going to hold them first, and then the last parent to travel just holds them, and then and you put in there they'll agree to give to the other parent. So they'll just kind of stay with the last parent that travels. If you have one parent that's like the record keeper, you say dad will hold the passports, and they'll always go back to dad. But that's the different for everybody. So I'd basically say you want provisions surrounding the passports and renewal, and then you want provisions surrounding notice and what to provide the other party.
Okay. No, those are all really great points. And then if you were going to give listeners who, let's say, you know, have children with a parent who maybe they moved back to India or they're living in China, or, you know, what kind of provisions do you put in a parenting plan, or do you? I mean, how do you?
It's really tough. I mean, I had a case that went to trial a couple of years ago where mom was trying to move to India with the child. And we stopped that from happening because there was no guarantee that dad would ever get visits. But I've had other provisions where people have gotten along and mom spends part of the year in Russia. She lives here, but she spends part of the year there. And dad was okay with the kids going. And so we just put, you know, things in there that said that mom agreed that, you know, obviously the agreement is to be enforced, and if the father has to take extraordinary measures and seek enforcement, mom will pay fees for that. So I mean, there's things you can do. Whether that's really would be easy to enforce is another story, but you want to, you know, really contemplate that if somebody abuses these provisions too, that they're required to pay your attorney's fees if you have to go to court and try to get them back. I mean, usually that would happen anyway, but sometimes just putting those things in there makes people really think about it, you know.
Yeah. Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, good. I think that was, you know, for, you know, end of summer and thinking about travels, and even just for future, you know, like, you know, you want to go away to Mexico for, you know, spring break.
Christmas. Yeah. Or Christmas or something. Yeah. It comes up a lot, and you just plan ahead, you know, and I think being reasonable is completely always the best thing to do. Don't try to like think about it like this too. Don't try to punish your child and be like, I don't want you going on that trip because I found out about it 29 days before and it's supposed to be 30. Like, think about this. This is about an experience for your kid. Try, I mean, yes, there should be standards and guidelines, but I think it's important that when either parent can, they encourage these opportunities with the other parent for the kids, just like you would want them to do for you, right? I mean,
absolutely. And like you said, they're making memories, and these memories last a lifetime. I mean, got some recent pictures from my kids because they're overseas right now with their family and their dad, and they are just having such a wonderful time and experience that, you know, they probably would never have here. So,
remember
it's about kids.
Love it. Okay. Well, it sounds good. Well, hey, everybody, thanks for listening today. Hope this was helpful for you. This is just one of those things in parenting plan that people don't always think about. Or if you're ever updating your parenting plan, doing a modification, and this has been a problem, or even if it hasn't been yet, get it in there. I can't tell you how many cases I've had where the passport thing, it's like, it becomes like this point of contention, and just make it easy for yourself. So anyway, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.